Hey guys, it's the Jam Room Podcast. Today I got to sit down with Vinnie Eastwood from The Vinnie Eastwood Show. He's a radio broadcaster, broadcasting on American Freedom Radio. Spent his career kind of delving into the murky waters of conspiracy theory. Be sure to check out all of his details in the description below. Go to his website, check him out on YouTube. Really cool dude, had a lot of fun. Hope you enjoy.
Into this computer, so I'm just going to have to jostle a few things. One moment, please. I need that USB thing over right here, hooked into the back of that thing like a cock into a vagina. All right, so it turns out that I just had to click the 48 volt button, whatever the fuck that means.
Yeah, how you been, dude?
Well, I don't know. We were just drinking the day before yesterday, because me and my bandmate Mike, we were just like, bro, it's been a really shitty week, and we haven't had a shitty week in a long time, and we have actually haven't even had a drink or played together in a very long time either.
Oh, I know the feeling, dude.
So we took Sunday off, and we got 2 dozen beers and a shitload of weed and ciggies.
Beautiful.
And just fucking burn through it, you know?
Oh, absolutely, and man.
Made a song. And we listened back through the old catalogue, bro. Like, every time we jammed together, we'd come up with maybe, like, 3 original songs.
Yeah.
But we recorded them all.
Mm-hmm.
So we've now got, like, a cache of, like, 150 songs or so.
It takes you way too long to realise you should record everything, hey?
It didn't take me very long to realize that, because I'm in broadcast radio with archiving, and I thought to myself, you know what, we're in a day and age where you can speak a piece of wisdom 40, 50 years ago, and because it was filmed, people are still today watching it on YouTube.
Yeah, you never know, it's all content, got to get it out.
Yeah, so I was just wondering about that, you know, playing and doing a lot more music and songs and shit like that, because I've done so much in the truth movement circuit that it's kind of like, yeah, we can just leave it for a bit, because there's still all my content out there that people can still listen to.
Oh, there's a lot of catching up to do out there.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's weird. So you're just going to focus on some music for a bit?
Maybe. I don't know. All right, but anyway, that was what was going on with me.
That's fantastic. I jam quite a lot as well, and yeah, it bugs you when it goes for too long without doing it. I get frustrated, I get antsy, I start blaming other people for not making it happen.
Some people meditate, but I think that getting shit done in the 3D universe, like, actually clears your consciousness, sort of thing.
Oh, you got to create something. Yeah, you got to create something real that you can see. And the best thing about a song is that every time you listen to it, you hear something new in it, and it's like the gift that keeps giving, hey.
Well, dude, we were like, me and Mike, we normally go to bed at like fucking 8 o'clock or 7 o'clock at night or whatever, because we're real early birds. We get up at like 4 or 5 in the morning most mornings, and we were up at like 1 o'clock in the morning. And I said, hey, bro, have you seen our unfinished song folders? And he's like, what do you mean our unfinished song folder? And I go, well, we've got 2 folders. One of them's unfinished and the other one's unswedish.
Oh, yeah.
And the unswedish ones are just the bad songs. You know, when you have a jam and you're just not feeling it, and the lyrics suck and the fucking chords are terrible, it just bores the shit out of you listening to it.
And just after you're done with it, you don't really know how to start a conversation with a guy. You just sort of walk out and they're like, oh, sorry, dude. Yeah. Don't know what happened there.
But in our case, we just go, okay, next. And we listen to a whole bunch of our old songs, and some of them are really funny, some of them are really deep, and like one of them got us real emotional, like, whoa, we really felt that listening back to it.
Yeah, recording. You take it back to that night and you're like, man, we were feeling something then.
Oh no, it didn't even take us back to the night. It was the song itself was sung and fucking played so well that it produced a visceral response, an actual trigger of chemicals in our bloodstream or something, and it made us feel different. Like it made us really feel touched and alive. When you can, we can do that when you're listening to one of your own songs. Fuck, man, you're onto something.
Oh, absolutely.
And we were like, yeah, bro, we have to start actually making the studio versions of these songs, man, because these were just jams that we fucking made up on the spot,
mm-hmm.
and they can produce that kind of shit. Imagine what happens when we spend an extra couple of hours or a day on it, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. As long as you don't go too far and strip the magic out of it, people are guilty of that quite a lot, I think.
Yeah, yeah, and that was exactly what I was thinking just recently, is that's precisely what I was doing. I took the magic out of my own work, mm-hmm. by worrying about what everybody's going to think about it and all of that kind of shit, as opposed to my normal, fuck it, let's just do it,
yeah.
Attitude.
So what is it that you play?
I'm a singer.
Ah, yeah, a good lyricist, I would guess.
Yeah, and it also helps if the lyricist actually has rhythm. Mm-hmm. And can make up all the lyrics of an original song on the spot while you're playing the guitar rhythm to it.
That's a rare thing, man. I've been in bands for most of my life, and it's always the last piece of the puzzle. Singers can't jam 90% of the time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're terrible, bro. I tried to do like, what was his name? Genocide from genocideRap.com. I had a talk with him after the show. I tried to do a bit of freestyling or whatever, but he got nothing, you know. Like absolutely nothing. He writes and rehearses all his lyrics. He can't come up with it.
There's a big difference between a instrumentalist and a musician. That's the way I put it. So you can be really good at your instrument, but if you can't create, you're not a real musician.
I don't know. I think the definition of musician is quite broad. And Mike, my guitarist, he reckons that everybody can sing, provided they've had enough piss.
Yeah, yeah. Well, at least they could think that they can, and they can sound good to themselves. Everyone's got a note in them.
Well, drumming and beats are as old as time itself. Music's actually a part of everybody, whether they like it or not. And so, in essence, we are all musicians. It's just some people are so much better at different aspects of being a musician. Being in the moment.
Mm, absolutely.
I would say is the greatest tool in a musician's arsenal.
Yep, absolutely. And that's one that's it's underrated, because you look at the pop music scene, it's manufactured. You don't really, there's no Led Zeppelin anymore. You don't get Tool on the radio. People don't really know what it's like to really emotionally connect and go with another musician at the same time.
Yep. Are we recording, by the way?
I'm recording at the moment. I'm kind of just recording anything. I'll sort of edit it out later on, depending on where we probably start. But do you want to get into conspiracy stuff? Or?
Yeah, sure. Well, let's just start the show officially.
Let's start the show then. All right.
I'm the most subscribed YouTube news channel in New Zealand, with more subscribers than New Zealand Herald TV, who've been around for 108 years.
Impressive.
And I accomplished that largely, if only by myself, mostly with the support of donations from people. I've created the largest online archive of New Zealand protests and public meetings in New Zealand history. I've interviewed for multiple thousands of hours, multiple hundreds of different people who are highly educated or highly experienced in the different fields of study, ranging from the very natural and very reasonable and politicians and that kind of thing, all the way over to the very supernatural and incredibly crazy, even if I don't believe them.
Yeah.
I still have them on. Still hear them out.
Yep.
Still have a laugh with them. Still try to understand what they're talking about and how they think about it.
Mm-hmm.
and so that the audience gets to decide.
Oh yeah, it's too early in the game to really judge anything right now. The jury's out on so many things. You got to entertain these ideas at least. If you shut that down, you shut down a lot.
Well, the greater the amount of subjects that you're exposed to in the shorter amount of time and the depth to which you can get into those subjects. A lot of this stems from suffering from narcissism.
Mm-hmm.
So narcissism is a brain disorder that when my dad beat me and my mum neglected me for the large part, I didn't get enough love and enough attention to develop a normal brain. So your brain's composed of three parts. There's the little reptilian brain, that's your like your thumb, and your mammal brain, that's your fingers, close them over your thumb, and then your neocortex, which is your new brain. This is where it does all your thinking, and that's your other hand, and you clasp that over it. So it kind of looks like a thumb wrapped within a fist with a hand wrapped around it. Those are the three layers.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, I've got the mammal brain and the neocortex dialed down a bit, and it's mostly more reptile. Anger, territory, and manipulation, that kind of thing.
So you've always had this, right?
Yeah. It's something that you can only really develop after either major traumas or long periods of trauma early in life, both of which I've been through at various stages of my life, and it's come to a lot of the conspiracy research to actually study what it is that's happened to me, how I've been affected, and how it actually explains a lot of the way that I behave in the world and act in the world.
Mm.
So it's kind of like I had this profound realization, oh my God, I've been out there exposing all of these people for all the bad things that they are or whatever, and then I realized that I'm actually just like them in many, many ways. There's some things that I've retained, which psychopaths don't have anymore, you know, things like real visceral empathy and basically being able to care about someone in a way that actually produces a physical response when you feel real grief over the loss of a dear friend. Those kind of things a psychopath doesn't have. I do, and unfortunately they've also been dialed up.
Mm-hmm.
So all the experiences that I have are generally a lot more intense than an average person would look at a situation.
Yeah, you carry a lot more emotional weight with them, right?
Well, it's because of the way the brain functions is you go through the three layers specifically for a reason. You see and observe an object. You then, with your second mammal brain, you go, how do I feel about that? And then you go down into the reptile brain, which reacts. Okay. Now, if your first two layers are deficient, it means that you're much, much quicker to feel the emotion and hyperventilate the thought and treat something as a threat than other people are, all right? Mm-hmm. Intensely survivalistic. So I think that maybe the large part of the reason why I do what I do to try and help humanity to help itself by learning about stuff from people who actually know what they're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
and if they aren't actually talking about it, it's still very interesting to hear and does get you thinking about things in a whole bunch of different directions that you hadn't maybe considered before, is because of self-preservation. All right, it came to that profound realization. Okay, so this ruthless criminal sociopathic scumbaggery taking over the earth. And they will enslave and kill anybody who doesn't want to be a slave.
Yeah, fuck those guys.
Yeah, I can't do that. Can I fight these people all by myself? Nope. and it's the survival program running. So this is how my survival instinct works. We're not free unless all of us are free. Ergo, all the people that are actually resisting the scumbaggery directly at the coalface are people that don't have radio shows.
Yeah.
Don't do YouTube videos. Don't write up blogs about their stuff. Don't record their appearances on the media, etc., or whatever.
Yeah.
So I go around and I find all the activists in my local area who are exposing all this stuff. And what I find out is that all the same thing that I've been hearing about in documentaries about police state measures taking place in America were actually being mirrored here.
Yeah.
And that big connection to the global extermination plot and enslavement plot. Yeah, essentially, I don't do what I do because I feel like I've got a choice in it or anything like that. I don't feel like I do.
Well, that's a big part of everything in life. Like, I see that there's obvious things that we don't have a choice over. Like, we don't have a choice over our sexuality, over our sense of humor, over what kinds of foods we like. These are the things that are inbuilt in us. And one of those things is this skepticism and sort of a rebellion against any kind of suppression or bullshit, basically. And some people naturally have different sort of levels of which they can handle. I can't, you know, you might be able to believe something based on faith.
Explanation for that. Because if you raised and you have lots of bad examples of authority being given to you, you create what psychiatrists are now calling oppositional defiance disorder, which means because you ain't seen authority being used responsibly, you oppose it all the time.
Yeah.
Just because it's authority. Some authority actually has weight and ground.
And some of it's absolutely necessary.
Yeah. And the question is, you know, where do we draw the line? Are we going to the Puritan libertarian situation, or are we going to a corporate fascist situation, or some kind of a green communism legislation? It doesn't matter because they all actually achieve the same ends. Every time the libertarians think they've achieved something with their vote, it's lowering taxes or something like that, which usually means tax cuts for the elite, which the libertarians don't freaking belong to.
Yeah.
Right? And every time the Greens and the Communist parties get something that they want, it's usually increasing the taxes and taking the money away from the middle class, which is them, to give to the elite.
Exactly. Yeah. It's this crony capitalism.
And every time the corporate fascist wins, they're the elite. Again, so it doesn't matter which way you're voting. And see, that's where it comes down to that phrase of not having a choice. Or as Mark Passio puts it, moral obligation. Once you know about this shit, you have a moral obligation to do something about it and tell people about it. Not one or the other, but both.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
And I was talking to a woman at a party one time, and she said, yeah, but I don't feel like I'm doing anything, Vinny. And I go, are you raising your kids right? No vaccinations, not letting them have fluoridated water, you're not giving them GMOs or any of that shit? No? Well, then you're doing your job right. You're doing enough.
Yeah, as long as you live it, then it's you can be an activist just through example, right?
You are an example to everybody else that you interact with on a daily basis.
Yeah, you don't need to get preachy about it.
So it's not that difficult for me to get people to shut the fuck up and start listening to you for reason. Oh, what do you do for a living? I'm an internationally renowned talk radio show host with more subscribers than the mainstream media.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
And I also don't drink fluoridated water. You just add that one in.
I was at a party one time and some lady yells out, oh, you'll be talking about the reptilians next.
Yeah, that happens. As soon as conspiracy theorists jump off the deep end, everything that is really easy, low-level conspiracies sort of get, baby out with the bathwater sort of thing. And all conspiracies are wrong because some of these are pretty radical.
Yeah, because
There's gauges of things. There's certain things you have to sort of, you got to follow the train, right?
Well, I heard an interesting technique about getting over your fears. Let's say you have a fear of snakes.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So you want to get to the point where you can encounter a snake and not feel as much or any fear.
Yeah.
And they said that what they did in these experiments is that they would put a string in a coil kind of like fashion, sort of like a snake on the floor.
Yeah.
And they'd notice a very slight heart elevation. And then they put in a bit more something like a rope or whatever. And gradually they'd build it up until it's basically a full snake.
Yeah.
And they find that the person who gets exposed to these small elements of fear in a step-by-step process can eventually alleviate their fear of the actual thing that they're afraid of.
Yeah.
Right? So when you learn about the New World Order, I mean, mate, if you're not afraid of the New World Order, there's something fucking wrong with you. You're being retarded, bro. These are very dangerous guns. Yeah. They've been dangerous for since history has begun. If you're not afraid of these people, then there's a lot of things that you're robbing yourself of. Mm. For example, the motivation to not get exterminated is quite a strong and fierce force in my life. It's allowed me to accomplish quite a bit.
Yeah, it's a pretty handy
one. For
the positive
good. Mm. And it's only because I'm scared shitless of getting exterminated. You know, that fear might not be right up there on some people's list. No, I don't care if I get exterminated. It'll be all right. You're being exterminated right now, bro.
But whatever, like what we were talking about with, is it their fault? Everyone has certain limits to which they can sort of believe things based on whatever belief system they're in. So if they discount these, if they just don't believe it, then they don't think they're under threat. So it's not like they're not reacting to it. They just literally don't buy it.
Well, I call it the seventh man syndrome. Statistically, if you tell somebody, if seven different people come up to you at a different stage in your life and say the exact same thing to you, even though it's contrary to your point of view, you'll then consider changing your point of view, no matter how strongly you actually have it. Now, that's just a bell curve, of course. Like some people, it's not you saying the same thing seven times to somebody.
Yeah. Seven sources. Right? Mm.
Seven different sources. Mm. Now, that sounds like a Subway sandwich to die for.
Yeah. Well, you could eat a lot of crap from that.
Yeah. One can only hope.
Yeah. So you really started as long as you can remember ago, basically? Always had this sort of attitude?
Well, I can't trace all the seven sources, but maybe I only took one or two, but I think it was the year in university that really did it, that 2004-2005 sort of gap. I had a flatmate who introduced me to weed and conspiracy theories. I think the first thing I watched was 9/11, The Truth and Lies of 9/11 by the late Michael Rupert.
Okay.
Who was a Justice Department official who was involved in CIA cocaine smuggling. And they tried to kill him a couple of times and that kind of thing. So he made this big presentation investigation into the Bush family and 9/11 and drug trafficking and all of this kind of stuff. And I can recall maybe about 20 minutes into it, as this guy's laying out, as though we're in a courtroom, evidence of all of these different things. Like, this guy's amazing investigator, right?
Yeah.
You know, the guy's won several medals of commendation from the Department of Justice and all sorts of different interagencies that he's worked for on task forces. Like, he's the man. And I just start cracking up with laughter. It just got so funny to me how that every single bit of evidence he brought out was so rock solid and so obscene with the monstrosity that it portrayed that I couldn't do anything but laugh.
Yeah, sometimes it gets too ridiculous.
Now, it wasn't just weed and conspiracy theories that my flatmate introduced me to. It was also the comedy of Bill Hicks.
Oh, yeah. A ton from a similar sort of generation, I guess. But, yeah, a lot of us started with some Bill Hicks sort of things.
And then there was the film Office Space by Mike Judge.
That's a Mike Judge film, yeah.
And the film The Matrix.
Massive one, 99.
Well, the thing is, 99 came in a big three for me. It was The Matrix, Fight Club, and American Beauty.
Yeah. American Beauty was huge.
Yeah. Well, see, those three films really affected me in a lot of the way that I'm thinking, or at least opened me up to it. And then I got into a little bit of Michael Moore, you know, read his books and did Fahrenheit 9/11 and went on to The Truth and Lies of 9/11, then found Alex Jones and then found Coast to Coast and then found out about ancient stuff and then went into psychopathy and narcissism and media corruption and then got into activism and making movie videos and becoming a talk radio show host. I quit my job. Got paid like 22 grand, I think.
So what year is this? What are you talking about? Is this obviously before you started all your radio career?
This was 2008, I think it was, when I quit my job and started doing YouTubing full time. And then it was until 2010 that we launched the Vinnie Eastwood Show, but I was co-host with on the Global Freedom Report on American Freedom Radio for 6 months, and then they fired the host that I was co-host with and just gave me the show.
Oh, yeah. Who was that at the time?
Brent Johnson.
All right, Brent Johnson. Can't remember him. I did used to listen to it, though.
Yeah, back in the day, man.
Yeah. And so what made you decide to do the radio thing apart from any other medium?
Well, I think it was my auntie Vapi Kupinger. She was on Radio Waitea, Urban Māori Radio, and she only did a show one night a week at 9 o'clock at night, and she had higher ratings than the biggest mainstream media show with talk show hosts on it and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And that's because, she told me that how she managed to do that. Because she talked about climate change, she talked about alternative health, she talked about all sorts of the stuff that the mainstream media weren't covering, you know. And she said that the reason why her audience was so large and she got so many Māori to tune in is because she was able to take all of these seemingly disparate, complex, faraway concepts and then relate it to Māori.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah,
and I was like, well, that's a very interesting concept, isn't it? Because I was a New Zealander who was trying to take all of these disparate concepts and relate it to Americans.
Mm.
And she brought me on her show a couple of times. And then Mitch Santel, who became my producer, noticed me on YouTube. All and right. He suggested to American Freedom Radio that they bring me on as a guest or do something like that for the American Freedom Report at that time, which was hosted by Dave Von Kleist and Brent Johnson, respectively. Mm. And then Dave left that show, and Brent did a couple of trial and error things with other co-hosts. You know, he just promised a whole bunch of people a possible co-host position and wanted to run through a week with everybody. But after they did the week with me, the American Freedom Report went from the lowest rated show on the network to the third highest rated show on the network.
Oh, wow.
In the first week. And so everybody just said, Brent, you know, just take Vinny as your co-host. And he goes, no, I've got somebody else to try out. And I think maybe halfway through the first show, with this woman, Brent told me that she flaked out, but in truth he kind of lost it with her during a break, and she just hung up, and so they called me in sort of emergency, right? And then I was just sort of the co-host from then on, you know.
Oh, beautiful.
And about 6 months later, they the network didn't really see the point having Brent as the host and me as the co-host sort of thing, and they decided to give me the show.
Oh, wow. Took it right out from under him.
Well, yeah. I mean, out with the old and with the new.
Yeah. At what point, I don't know, was it when you were working with American Freedom Radio that Peter Santilli was there and all that debacle went down?
Oh, yeah.
That was through American Freedom Radio, right?
Yeah, he'd been kicked off, I think, a number of a network beforehand for something, and then we didn't know about that or something. He said that he quit, And so naturally, when he got booted off our network, he also said that he quit that. But yeah, that was a horrific time in my life, bro. Like that, at that point, I'd been looking into and been a talk radio show host, studying and talking about scumbaggery.
Yeah.
For like 5 years, right?
Mm-hmm.
And Pete Santilli made me feel like I know nothing.
Yeah. Yeah, he sounded like an arrogant prick.
Oh, bro, it was like... I don't know. It was like dealing with a demon in human form, right? Just really the most horrific abuse that you've ever seen. Huge litanies of emails, screenshots, comments, abusive videos that he... uploaded, accused me of being a pedophile and all sorts of gross names, reporting my accounts, getting my YouTube channel taken down, trying to get my Facebook channel taken down, stealing other people's Facebook accounts with hundreds of thousands of followers and just renaming it in his own name. His name, Guerrilla Media Network, that he stole from me.
So that's what it was mainly about, right? He wanted to work with you on the idea or something?
No. He'd already decided that he was going to steal everything from me. At the time that he started talking to me about, I want to do something with you about Guerrilla Media. In December, I think we had that conversation in like January or whatever about doing something with Guerrilla Media together.
Mm-hmm.
He'd already purchased the domain name Guerrilla Media Network for himself, without telling me, right? And then we had a conversation about it, about a 2-hour conversation, which I still got the recording of, where I explained to him the whole command structure, how people are supposed to get their revenue divvied out, how the top brass aren't allowed to interfere with people's stuff, and all the there's like 20 rules of conduct and stuff like that, the things that you've got to follow in order to qualify, and a round table of elders in the truth movement who have a tangible track record, who haven't screwed people over, to actually be there for everybody. And if anybody's like infighting or whatever, they've got to actually sort it out with people and get them to dialogue. You know, just all these sorts of interesting things that would make a multinational media conglomerate without one actually existing.
Mm. Yeah, that's fascinating. And he just did he even try to get that kind of thing up and running the next day? Yeah,
he launched a Guerrilla Media by himself and called Suzanne Posel and told her that I'd told him that I was walking away from the project. And had given it to him.
Oh, scum.
The day after, like, didn't even wait, fuck it, you know?
Jesus Christ.
And then he hacked Suzanne Posel's website, and at that time she was, like, in the top 6,000 websites in the world kind of thing, or something ridiculous. She was at the height of her thing, and it got taken down for, like, maybe a month.
Wow.
He started up a dozen websites with her name in it.
Far out.
Because she's an investigator, a paralegal and stuff like that. And how a psychopath operates is that they quickly try to destroy you and make you incredibly afraid. Mm. Oh, and he did. And he destroyed us. And we were incredibly afraid. Yeah. And it was years before we struck back with that, the unauthorized biography of Pete Santilli.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I did see that. Yeah, that was hilarious.
You know, Pete didn't know that we had his court documents from the time he assaulted the fire chief. He didn't know that we had the court documents for him and his wife breaking and entering. He didn't know that we had his social security number and his license and the facts he sent to the FBI. He didn't know that we had his military records. He didn't know any of this stuff that we were keeping on him. The whole time, For 3 years, we endured this abuse.
Jesus. And how long did it take for you to get your YouTube back up and running and get the name back?
It took us like 2 months. You know, that's like maybe 2 weeks rent or something that cost me. And tried to do it again.
Yeah. And he went on to like cover that the Bundy Branch scenario, and they even had him on Fox or whatever. What's that, sorry?
Where the protester Lavoy Finicum got killed.
Yeah. And so he was covering that, right?
Yeah. He was you know, recording their meetings and stuff like that, live streaming it to YouTube, and of course the FBI were watching that and then tried to use that as evidence to convict the Bundys and the other people and that kind of thing, and convict Santilli. Those charges were later overturned, but it certainly did a chilling effect, didn't it?
Yeah.
Haven't seen any other occupations, have you?
No, and haven't heard much of Peter anymore.
And then because he's facing very similar charges, I think it was either Nevada or Texas, I forget, back in 2014 when he was at the Bundy Ranch there also. So he's still in jail because Pete got arrested at the wildlife refuge in Oregon and is still in jail. And Deb Jordan has...
What did he get arrested for?
Oh, a number of charges. I forget the exact names of them or whatever.
Yeah.
But in either case, the charges didn't stick. Just like the charges with the handgun didn't stick. The charges that it was loaded didn't stick. The charges that it had extra ammunition didn't stick. The charges that it was unlicensed didn't stick. The charges that he drove out of state when he wasn't supposed to didn't stick. You know, just all sorts of things that he's done just suddenly just magically go away, you know. Threatens on air to shoot Hillary Clinton in the vagina, right?
Yeah, I saw that.
Just champion stuff. And we've also got the ticket stubs for when the, piece of paper that the Secret Service, very nicely worded letter that they left on his doorstep that he scanned and had in his... possession when he threatened Anonymous on air.
Yeah, that was right. And they went to town on him, hey?
And then they hacked him, you know, just... You can see the genius that you're dealing with...
Yeah, that's... He must have some friends in high places or something. There's no way he could get all those charges dropped without having that, you know?
Yeah, well, that's when the facts with the FBI got leaked after Anonymous hacked his account. This was at a time when we were fighting back against him, and after he stole the Trucker's Ride for the Constitution's Facebook page that had 200,000 likes and renamed it Guerrilla Media Network with 200,000 likes, they were organizing to get about up to 1 million trucks into Washington, D.C. to shut the whole thing down. And protest to remind people about the power of the Constitution.
Okay.
And then they appointed Pete Santilli their head of media.
Ah.
And then 1,000 trucks wound up showing up. The $50,000 that was in their PayPal that they gave Pete Santilli access to disappeared, and the password got changed. And so there was nobody there to fill up any of the gas for any of the trucks that had traveled all the way across the country to get to D.C. for the protests. And then Santilli wound up at the Bundy Ranch with a brand new motorhome, brand new Apple technology, brand new microphones, brand new live broadcasting, iPads and all of that kind of stuff.
Jesus. And he never got arrested for stealing from that organization?
The email the fax that he sent the FBI was entitled Operation Out Truck.
Okay. What does that mean?
It was an FBI operation to infiltrate, well, this is what I speculate based upon what I saw and what, or at least what was done, was to infiltrate the Truckers' Ride for the Constitution, which was getting incredibly popular at that time. And I think it might have been 2013. Yeah. And getting a lot of traction, if you'll pardon me a small pun, was to infiltrate it and to destroy it. And the fax that he sent the FBI was at a time when me and Suzanne Posel were exposing him for doing this. And we had a lot of the people from the Truckers' Ride for the Constitution on our respective radio shows telling us and telling the audience about the many underhanded and dodgy and terrible things that Pete Santilli had done. The second he took over the control of the PayPal account, he then started an email campaign saying everybody that the organizer, Zita Andrews, had stolen the money and that she was using it to buy meth.
Jesus.
Yeah, it just breaks your heart, bro, because he's such a horrible person. And there are people out there, there's actually like Facebook groups saying like free Pete Santilli and all of this kind of stuff. And it's all being orchestrated by his, by the woman he was working with, Deb Jordan, if that's even her real name. She used to call herself Susanna Cole. And it's just, you see the lies, the deceit, and you know that it is, but these other people, they only see that he's a patriot and a truther and a former Marine, and that he's a talk radio show host for liberty and truth and to support the Constitution, when the reality is just like what was his name, that guy who was working for the Hal Turner was a mainstream talk radio show host, huge following,
yeah,
working for the FBI the whole fucking time.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
In what sort of capacity was he being a radio host? Was he like a government shill kind of vibe, or was he?
No. He's telling everybody to rise up against the government, to take up arms, to respect the Constitution,
oh, really?
To form militias and all of this other kind of stuff. So that all of these people would then email him and he could pass on that information to the government.
That's a nice gig.
Okay, and it's the same thing that Pete Santilli's doing, bro. He's an agent of the state that's working against it while wearing the very stars and stripes that he was sworn to protect. Well, that was a very humbling day for me because, you know, well, years, and it's a painful thing to even talk about it and revisit it because of the intense trauma and shock.
Yeah.
And it's like that with bad memories. Nobody needs to give you a reminder or anything like that. They're there.
Oh, yeah.
You know, they don't go away.
Yeah.
But it's the good memories. They fade, they disappear, you know, that kind of thing that you need reminders of.
Yeah.
And what that taught me is that you've got to try and create new good memories every day because tomorrow's too late.
Wise words, man.
One can only hope.
If you kind of took an overview of your interactions with the media and anything like that, is he kind of like the one bad apple scenario, or is there sort of this culture throughout the whole system?
In both the alternative and mainstream press, the vast majority of them are like me, but they're not like me, if you know what I mean. They've got the same viciousness and attention to detail, mm-hmm. but they don't have empathy. They don't question themselves. They've allowed themselves to essentially become their ego. I'm still struggling to contain mine because I've realized that if you surround yourself with yes men, you'll find out that they'll stab you. And what was it that happened to Julius Caesar? He was stabbed by 14 of his closest confidants, and they all took a turn stabbing him, you know, to make sure that they were all guilty and none of them would rat on each other.
Mm.
Okay, and that's what happens when you let your ego get control and you don't allow people to question you and do that kind of thing. And you see it happening a lot in the media, you know, don't openly talk about the critiques. I don't hear a lot of talk radio show hosts talk about very humbling situations that, you know, things that are, that have happened to them, that have caused them to admit that they're wrong, or laugh at themselves and how stupid they were, or anything like that. They don't appear like a normal person, is what it struck me as, because they've got to go to break. You know, they don't have time to fill that stuff out. Yeah. And to me, it just becomes another disingenuous shadow of the very media that we're supposed to be disabling.
Yeah.
And the way to disable it isn't by talking about anger and fear and negative spectrum emotion and things like that. It's about harnessing people's laughter, a large part of it, because only that can dispel much of the negative pulses that are going through your body when you're hearing scary information.
Oh, yeah. It's, if you don't have humor, it's just like you're going to have no way to transform that bad into a good. And even if it's just laughing at its ridiculousness, like how bad could it possibly be? This is beyond a joke. That should be really funny then. And you might as well laugh about it, because otherwise you're just going to sort of tie yourself in knots and have a bad day.
Yeah, well, we often forget that, and it means we just simply need reminding quite often, you know?
Yeah.
I remember when I was doing it 5 days a week, that was good, man. It was intense, you know? That was when I was a lot younger.
Yeah. So what's going on now? How often do you do your show now?
Well, now things have changed, man. Instead of just sitting there at 5 o'clock in the morning till 3 o'clock in the morning from Sunday till Thursday every week in my dressing gown with just a broken headset, I'm now got a green screen and a shirt and a tie on. And the lights are up. I've got two pretty powerful Macs in front of me with separate Skype accounts for each of them, so that one can be used as a screen share, so they can show you what articles I'm scrolling through on the Skype, and the other can be used as a webcam. And that way I'm able to intercut between not only something that I'm looking at on my screen, but also images of the guest's origin or the guest's webcam feed themselves later in the post-production. And my friend Mike, who's a pretty spectacular photographer, has gone out and taken some little time-lapse footage of beautiful stuff around Auckland City that we're now projecting on the green screen behind me. So it's a lot more work, and it's a lot different result. And I'm only doing one show a week at the moment,
mm-hmm.
but I'm doing two separate interviews that are 55 minutes each,
mm-hmm.
With a different guest. So it's kind of like I'm doing 2 1-hour shows a week, but I just record them at the same time live on American Freedom Radio.
Oh, beautiful. And you still get them up on YouTube. Do you live stream them?
No, haven't figured out how to live stream and broadcast live on American Freedom Radio. But, you know, maybe I should look into it.
Yeah, I see it. Google Hangout stuff and bits and bobs. I don't really know. I'm out of that world. I wouldn't have a clue how to do that live stuff. So they just have one a week. With your guests at the moment, how's things been changing? Because say 10 years ago, you were looking up conspiracy theories, you're getting into that world. You're getting hit with the what I would call the low-level conspiracies, where you don't really have to change your worldview at all. It fits right into a simple scientific explanation. Things like the fluoride, vaccines, all these problems, you can absolutely just believe them without having to change the entire view of the world. Nowadays, it's getting wacky. When did that start changing for you?
I think that actually started from day one. I always started to go straight into the wacky stuff because
yeah,
the
David Icke of the world, et cetera, et cetera.
Thing is, everything's crazy straight from the get go. So if you start thinking that I've got certain reservations about going into my search for the fucking truth of life, you're up shit creek.
Oh yeah, you're never gonna find that.
Yeah. Hey, Mr. Guru.
Yes.
I want to find the truth out about everything. Okay. What are you prepared to listen to? Only a small section of stuff that I already believe. Oh, okay. Do you imagine that's going to work? Well, I never really thought about it. No, you fucking didn't.
So you're kind of saying that you've always had this open mind that the wacky is plausible.
Well, I love movies. And I, like, you know how San Francisco, every time the San Francisco Bridge gets destroyed in a movie, right?
Mm-hmm.
All right. That's called your suspension of disbelief.
Yeah.
Okay. And I have a huge suspension of disbelief. And that's why, what's my favorite saying on this one? Even in a desert of lies, one may find a grain of truth.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a good one. To most people that are trying to get into it and trying to, obviously you can easily discount a lot from not buying some of the wacky, build up a straw man and just destroy that and you destroy the whole argument. When it comes to some sort of things, when you started talking about, you know, the crazy shape shiftings, you start talking about secret space programs, is it becoming more common to be talked about on your radio show at the moment? Is that sort of stuff coming up more and more?
No, I don't think so. It's been more or less the same the whole way along. Because everything's fair game.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if I were to read out a list of the little thingies that we've got going on at the Vinnie Eastwood show, it's reasonably diverse, I should think. You know, everyone knows New Zealand is corrupt except Kiwis, Vinnie Eastwood rant. Does mind control technology really exist? Yes, Dr. Nick Begich. New Zealand government seabed mining agenda exposed, Phil McCabe. Everything you don't want to know about New Zealand, Vinny explains the Common Sense Party. Are vaccines being used to create a Delta working class, Dr. Rima Labo. The Illuminati is absolutely for real, Mike Sparks. James Bond is real. London terror attacks tied to Freemasons, Dr. Kevin Barrett.
So you kind of got a buffet up there, right?
Will fracking make England uninhabitable? Ian R. Crane. What really happened to guerrilla media? And that's just the first page. And I noticed that I get maybe 4,000 or 5,000 unique visitors a week, right?
Mm-hmm.
But there's 400,000 page views. So you just keep scrolling through the pages, and it's like, whoa, there's some amazing stuff, you know.
Yeah. So from all that sort of stuff, you've got this huge platter in front of you with absolutely every flavor on it. Have you been able to put together something that you would call the truth? Something that is the big boy?
Yeah.
Yeah.
The great cycle.
What's that all about?
Well, it starts off on narcissism.
Mm-hmm.
And narcissists have a certain way of looking at the world. They have a certain way of behaving and treating other people, and a certain way of using other people and that kind of thing. It's usually caused by trauma and stuff like that. And then you go on to psychopaths, who have very, very similar ways of controlling people and manipulating people. And then you go on to mind control and things that have been declassified and the various techniques used in mind control programs, you'll find that they're actually very similar methods to those used by narcissists and psychopaths to manipulate and control people.
Yeah.
And then you have a look at cult indoctrination techniques, and you find out that a lot of the methods in cult indoctrination are very similar to those used in mind control programs that are government-sponsored, and also very similar to the methodologies by which narcissists and psychopaths manipulate and use people. Ah, that's very interesting. And what happens to the victims of mind control cults, the victims of psychopaths, the victims of narcissists, and they become known as complex post-traumatic stress disorder.
Victim becomes a victimizer, and it's a perpetual cycle. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. But here's the kicker. Every institution that we currently hold in any regard, business, media, politics, religion, law, medicine, are all using the exact same cut of manipulation and cult indoctrination techniques.
Mm-hmm.
And that means that the entirety of the populace is under a system that perpetuates this exact same process. Everybody who's ever been educated in any way, shape, or form in a public or in a public school or in a university is walking around, at the very least, with a form of low-level traumatizing from mind control.
Yep,
anybody who watches television, anybody who has ever gone and become a lawyer, become a captain or any officer in the military, anybody who gets into these positions of authority and power, they are all exposed to these same techniques. For example, sleep deprivation, repetition, having somebody who talks in a slow tone of voice, almost in the same speed as a human heart, so that it sort of lulls you to sleep and make sure that there's fluorescent lighting. So it's not too bright and not too dark, so that you kind of are etched into a very dreamy-like state. The same state that is brought about when you're watching television.
Yeah.
All right, and it allows you to be more receptive to it. But how do they keep you in the cult? How does a psychopath keep you in their employ or whatever? Well, you've got to promise them a whole bunch of things. And then you've got to threaten to withdraw all those perceived benefits. Oh, you won't get into heaven. Oh, you won't become a qualified doctor. Oh, you won't pass the bar exam. You have to threaten to withdraw the promised benefits of the cult in order to keep the cult member inside your employ. Oh, I'll leave you for somebody else if you do that.
Yeah, it's like constantly keeping people feeling like they're lacking something and there's an answer out there that they can have at a cost.
Now, the reason why every single genocide throughout history has occurred is because of the cycle. It's because of how the traumatized people behave when they've got a psychopath that's in charge of their giant mind control cult. That could be the government mind control cult, it could be the medical mind control cult, it could be the religious mind control cult. All are capable and have committed genocide, and all of them have had psychopaths at their head, and they've had psychopathic and narcissistic programming techniques passed down the way through the cult that affects every one of their followers, which will then follow them and commit atrocities, which then traumatize other people, which then get taken over by psychopaths and narcissists who traumatize them and create new institutions from the old that follow the exact same pattern, which eventually revolve in genocide again and again and again. That's why the pattern of history seems to repeat itself, is because nobody's actually ever noticed this cycle, know why it happens, and knows how to stop it. And I figured out all three simultaneously, just boom, oh, fuck, oh my God. And I had to take like freaking 6 months off work, bro. Oh, God, that was a big hit. Whew.
Well, let's hear it, Vinny. How do we fix that?
Well, you have to tell people about the cycle.
Mm-hmm. So
and that's it.
Inform first and then and then reflect and break it.
Because every time somebody knows about the cycle, anytime they get indoctrinated into a mind control cult or something, they instantly identify what it is and get the fuck out of there and don't get traumatized.
It's perspective, right?
And don't get destroyed. You've got to learn this early. Well, Jimmy, yeah, Daddy, well, you're 5 years old now, son, so we're going to send you to a mind control cult. What's a mind control cult? It's called a school. Oh, okay. They're going to have really terrible lighting. Uh-huh. They're going to repeat a whole bunch of boring shit to you. Uh-huh. They're going to tease you if you don't fit in with the rest of the group. Uh-huh. They're going to have a claim of truth. Uh-huh. And basically, they're going to try and break you, son. Uh-huh. And you've got to tell them, fuck you, at every opportunity. I'm getting the fuck out of here. Bye-bye. Here's a pack of cigarettes. Off you go.
If only it was that simple, Vinny.
One can only hope.
So you're basically saying you have the power once you have the perspective, and you can break this cycle just from simple logic.
Yeah.
And if you know the cycle,
you can identify it before it happens, and you won't have to get traumatized, and you can tell the other people that you're responsible for to not do it either. And before you know it, probably it would take only a very fractional amount, maybe 5% of the population, to know about this dynamic, just this dynamic alone, before the entire population would become aware of it. They say in a herd of zebras, if a lion is nearby, one zebra will see it. Two, three, up to about 6% of the herd, they reckon, notices that there's a lion nearby before instantly the rest of the herd is awakened and start to move as one. Now, we've got the same sort of energy dynamic that flows through the universe here. We can take pictures of all the electronic radiation and signals and everything that are going through the air. Mm-hmm. Curly in photography shows that we're giving off these signals as well.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have that 100th monkey syndrome,
yep.
Boom. So like, imagine that. That's something worth dying for, I reckon. A world that is no longer in the perpetual grip of the grief process, where everybody is either being turned into or being used by narcissistic, psychopathic, mind-controlling cults.
That would be nice.
Mm-mm. You know, I'd like to get, you know, if somebody offered me that as an ice cream bar, you know, just with a little bit of chocolate sauce on top, bro, I'll eat that. Fuck yeah.
Yeah, give me the peace on earth. With extra chocolate.
You got some whipped cream too, Ken? Yeah. Like, fuck yeah.
and if that's really all it really takes, it's going to have to spread by some sort of intangible means, but it's still going to have to come up against and solve problems that are already controlling people. We're talking things like religious ideologies or anything that's suppressing anybody's sort of ability to question things for themselves.
Oh,
right?
Yeah. Well, that's why you just tell them about the techniques of mind control cults, and then after hearing the fifth or sixth symptom, they'll realize that their religion is one.
You'd hope so.
Hey, bro, I found out how to identify a mind control in five easy bullet points. Da, 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 da. Oh, my God, I'm part of a mind control cult. Yes, you are. Ba-boom. Truth bomb.
Get some flyers. We'll spread them around.
Yeah, man. We'll, I don't know. We'll inject it into the food or something, you know?
I don't know. Some people might have a problem with that.
Yeah, well, they should do.
Yeah.
Yeah, because you can't enforce your beliefs on other people. And I believe that there's something wrong with not wanting to know things that you don't want to know.
Yeah, I find that strange as well. I find people's, just like what we were talking about with people's natural sort of tendencies towards things, curiosity is one of those things as well. Some people just don't have it.
Mm.
And they can't be helped. They're just not interested.
You know what the least populated city on Earth is? Curiosity.
Mm. Is that a joke, Vinny?
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, we'll get more there. We'll get those flyers sorted out. We're offering them a free holiday to Curiosity. See what happens.
Takes a long time to get there.
Yeah.